Hello, everyone, and welcome to Be in the Know. Today, I'm chatting with Stephen Segi, a professor of marketing and the academic director of the EMBA program. So, Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about the current state of diversity in the workplace? Has there been progress over the last few years with increased awareness in the aftermath of the Me Too movement?
Sure. I mean, yeah, first of all, thank you very much for having me on here to discuss what is an exceptionally important topic. I think to answer your question, I can answer it in a very short way and I can answer it in a very long way. I think in a very short way, it's still pretty dire. But I do think that if you want a longer answer, then we do see progress that's occurring. So I can give, you know, some examples. I mean, there's loads of data out there. People can look at the actual data on diversity in the workplace. But I think if we take something like CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, the turn of the century, so what, 20 years ago now, I think you maybe two or three CEOs who were women. Today you have about 35, 36, 37, something like that. So there is obvious progress there. Is it enough? Of course not. And I think what's also interesting is we're talking a little bit today, I think, about gender diversity, but also diversity goes so much beyond gender towards things like sexual orientation, disability. There's a huge list I have here, sexual orientation, geography, all of these different things as well. But I think gender is maybe the key one to start with, at least. So it's improving, but there's still a hell of a long way to go.
Yeah, definitely. But at least we're off to a good start. And we know that diversity in the workplace is a goal worth striving for, but can you explain a bit about how it actually can benefit organizations?
Well, I think on a very simple level, I mean, there's loads and loads of research showing that, well, hold on, maybe I should dial back a little bit here and think about there's maybe the two kind of ways that I would approach this. I think on the one hand, there's a kind of moral and ethical component to this, which is that no matter what, we should have diversity in the workplace. I mean, we have, you know, we have a fairly sort of male, white male, and I'm also white male, dominated business environment. And there's no reason for that to exist apart from kind of path dependencies, historical, you know, reasons for that to occur and structural kind of barriers that are put in the way of women to move ahead in their careers. So I think there's a moral ethical issue there to begin with. The second issue though is good business. I mean, we do know a lot of the research will show us that diversity will lead to improved performance. So and there's many reasons for this. People coming from different kind of backgrounds, different understanding of how, you know, systems work, different, you know, different educational backgrounds, whatever, different lived experiences, if you will, bringing different things to a question and actually leading to superior performance, kind of positive conflict, if you will, that leads to superior performance. So, you know, on the one hand, there's a moral ethical component to this, but at the same time, even if there weren't this moral and ethical component, it just makes good business sense to have more women, more diversity at the top tables in companies and involved in these decisions.
Yeah, definitely. And so as director of the EMBA program, what kind of trends do you see in the program? And have you noticed a change in recent years?
I think, I mean, you look at sort of globally and the numbers generally play around at 30-33% of the any cohort would be women. I mean, I think, you know, there's some positive change coming in, and I think some very simple things that exist as we see more, you know, senior leaders who are women, then we'll see more women aspiring to be senior leaders and realizing that it's possible and the road is there, the role model, you know, and all of these the different issues, and Sheryl Sandberg talking about leaning in and all of, you know, the narrative has changed substantially. So you're seeing, given that the EMBA is one step toward senior managerial positions, we are seeing some increase in women applying and being accepted into EMBA programs. But still, when you look at the numbers, I can think of our most recent cohort. I mean, 2 years ago, the cohort was about 52% women, which was great. But now it's about 35 to 38% women. I'm not sure the exact number of this cohort. Now, why is that the case? There could be two. We haven't really looked into it in enough detail. There could be a couple of reasons. One reason could be that the 52% was an anomaly. That may be the situation. Or the situation could be, and you're seeing this a lot with COVID, that the net loss of jobs from COVID is female. And we're seeing that women are the ones who are struggling more so because of COVID, with kids at home and with traditional roles still being played out in families where women are taking a greater burden or a greater share of the burden of childcare. And when childcare is then being pushed back into the household, then we're seeing women are struggling and women are being laid off more and women's careers are suffering more. Academic publishing, you look at academic publishing where men have actually been publishing more because they're at home more, doing less travel, maybe doing less service. Women academics are publishing less. So I think you see that across all different industries, and maybe that's why we're seeing less applications to the EMBA program. I think in addition to that, one of the things that we need to think about more, I think, is what's the customer journey for women vis-a-vis men? And traditionally, we've done a very traditional form of sales or customer acquisition, if you will, for participants in the program. Is this a particularly male-dominated type of acquisition? You know, I've read some research saying that women candidates for EMBA programs like to actually visit classes more often and sit in on classes before they decide. So maybe we have to think about our recruitment strategies to actually get more women into the program.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. And we discussed earlier how diversity can benefit organizations, but what are the advantages of a diverse program for the EMBA participants? How do you think it could help them achieve their career goals?
I think there's two sort of ways to look at this. And I think one of these is just the fact that the reality is that you're going to be working in a more diverse workforce. So given that the EMBA by definition is some sort of incubation period for your career whilst you sit and look and think about how you're going to move on in your career, it should also reflect, I think, how the senior management of the future looks as well. So that's not just gender diversity, it's also, you know, race diversity, it's also, you know, sexuality diversity, all of these different components of diversity there. So I think the EMBA classroom has to reflect what the future looks like in that regard. And at the same time, you know, we're dealing with complex issues when we're trying to train the executives of the future, and they're going to be dealing with really complex issues going forward, whether it be about the environment or sustainability or any of these key issues moving forward. And the more diversity we have of opinion, of idea, of experience, of all of these things will feed into a richness in the classroom that allow better decisions to be made. You know, something very, very simple, you know, it appears that when you look in discussions of men and women discussing in groups, that women are more in tune with how it will affect families and how it will affect children and all of these things. Whereas men perhaps more attuned to thinking about, you know, efficiencies of business and all of these things. So just bringing in these different diversities of focus of what is important moving forward is key, and that a lot of that comes from diversity that exists in the classroom as well.
Yeah, definitely. So since we know that diversity is something really important, do you have any suggestions on steps that organizations can take to increase diversity, or even actions that individuals can take, and how we can all educate ourselves to support diversity in the workplace?
I think this is one of the most difficult things. And I think from my perspective as a, you know, white male, I think it's important to listen. And I think for men, because one of the big issues is you don't want, I mean, it would defeat the whole purpose of the thing if it was men that was deciding how women should, you know, advance themselves in organizations. That's kind of defeats the purpose of what we're trying to achieve here. So I think for men to be supporters of the diversity, I think it's really, really important to listen. And some things, you know, some of the things we're not great at sometimes is actually listening really to what people are saying and how we can support a more diverse environment, and how can we be more sensitive to some of the issues that traditionally have not been considered in an office environment. Very simple things. I mean, you know, we see it now, and again, the COVID situation and the confinements and all these things have brought certain things to light, but particularly around things like childcare. Yeah, I mean, you know, it becomes an issue. And two parents are now at home, so they're, you know, and I think it's better than it was. I mean, certainly in my parents' day, you know, my father was the primary breadwinner in the household. My mother worked, but then she stopped working and she was dealing with the kids and everything else. And now we do see more and more men at the gates of schools waiting for kids and all of these different things. But just really considering the issues that are important and trying to, you know, bring these issues into decisions that are being made as a variable that has to be considered when a decision is being made. But I think for men, the most important thing is really to listen and to see how they can be supportive of women. For women, of course, I'm not going to give advice here. I mean, but I think, you know, we do see that there are various women's support groups taking place within organizations, you know, supporting each other across organizations. You know, you see, you know, there's women's groups in cities. So there's the, I think what they call the Paris Women's Organization, a business women's association as well, supporting each other, providing training. There's a great startup in America called Chairman Mum, which is, there's Sarah Lacey, who used to be she was the founder of Panda Media Company. And then she did various other things. She exited that company, but she has founded a company called Chairman Mum. And it's really about, you know, supporting women who are startup founders. And it's a real, you know, and there's training and there's a network and there's, you know, it's a social media network. And at the same time, it's also a support network for women who are startup founders and who are entrepreneurs as well. So I think a lot of these things will go to helping and improving. And also from the EMBA perspective, from our perspective, I mean, one of the reasons I got involved in it, because thinking, if I'm the director of the EMBA, what can I do that will help to redress the balance of, you know, this gender disparity that exists? Mm-hmm. And in my role, I can try to get more and better women into the program so that, you know, if that feeds into senior managers, then we're going to train more managers in that regard as well.
Yeah, it's definitely really important for everyone to listen to others' perspectives and to be thinking of how we can all contribute to increasing diversity. And so if someone is looking at a company, like say I'm looking at a company's website or doing some research on them, how can I tell if they're committed to diversity and get an idea of what kind of steps they're taking?
I mean, that's always an interesting question. And I think when we talk to, also I teach in the Grand Ecole, so the master's level students, mm-hmm. and one of the things to tell them is, remember, when you're interviewing for a job, they're interviewing you and you're actually interviewing them at the same time.
Yeah. And
I will always tell the students that, you know, you guys are, you have certain cultural values and certain red lines you have and certain beliefs, a belief system that exists. Make sure the company is at least aligned with the key components of your belief system, because it will start to bother you. It doesn't matter how much money they pay you, but if they're not aligned, if they're doing things you don't approve of, if it's an environment that you don't approve of, then it's not going to be successful. You're not going to be successful in that company. So then the question they always ask is exactly the question that you asked now, which is, how do we, you know, understand that beforehand? And, you know, there's some formal things, there's some informal things, there's some, you know, reports. You will see company reports more and more talking about issues of diversity. So, you know, reading for publicly traded companies, reading company reports where they talk about these issues of diversity and their values as an organization. Also, I think people are more and more public today. So you'll see people on social media who perhaps work in a company. So find out what they're talking about, find out, you know, the stories about a particular company, talk to people. You know, find out as much as you possibly can, probe as much as you can about that company and see if they're promoting women and if they're, you know, allowing for, you know, that, whatever makes a diverse workplace work. I mean, you know, that culture, is it valued? Is it being pushed? Is it a KPI that they're striving to actually achieve? Look at the senior management. Is it all white men? I mean, one thing I was thinking about the other day, I'm a huge football fan, or soccer, as you guys call it, on the other side of the pond. So obviously the big thing was the European Football League, the shortest ever league. I think it was, 2 days? Or the attempted Americanization of our beloved football, franchise football, all of these different things. One of the things that struck me, and I was reading, there's a couple of pieces that have come out in Fortune and various things, a kind of post-mortem of why it failed and all these things. And I was thinking about JP Morgan, because JP Morgan was funding it to the tune of $4.5 billion.
Wow.
And when you look at it, I remember reading about it at the time, and I have some interest in this. I've done some research on football in my time. And also I used to have a football show on the radio in Turkey when I worked there for 2 years, and a radio show, sort of nationally syndicated radio show for football. Wow. So I have some interest in football, at least a sort of semi-amateur, professionalish kind of level. But when you see the proposals, you look at it and think, that's not going to work. It's just dumb. It's just not going to work. It's a misunderstanding of the product. What is the product you're selling? You're not including the fans, all of these different things. And I wonder then about JP Morgan. And I can see a lot of, you know, white guys in suits, American for the most part, sitting about thinking, yeah, this is a great idea. We'll do this, will work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I also think about football chairman. And again, all the chairman of the 12 clubs, it's pretty much white European men, some Americans and one or two from the Gulf, from the UAE, and I think from Qatar. No, it's the UAE because the Qataris, Paris Saint-Germain, the people's team didn't get involved in this. So we're okay here. So I just think about the JP Morgan, the investment team, had they had a little bit of diversity on their board, not just necessarily gender diversity, but national diversity and, you know, whatever, then it might have been a little bit people pushing back and saying, look, this is probably not a good idea. The groupthink kind of goes away. And likewise with the football chairman, and I say chairman because all men of a certain age group, you know, 45 years and over, billionaires living in this kind of, with a value proposition of we will make more money, which is not a great value proposition for any company to have, even if they will make more money. So I think that even there, you know, the diversity, the lack of diversity in the decision-making process for the European Super League was probably one of the biggest failings. And nobody just turned around and said, this is a dumb idea.
Yeah, it definitely just goes to show how important diversity is in getting those different perspectives and in, like you said, dismantling groupthink. So since we've been talking about organizational actions and individual actions, my last question is, how can managers advocate for diversity and support diverse teams?
Well, as I say, I think, you know, it's a very difficult situation to be in because people are busy managing and doing things and running, mm-hmm. because, you know, running a company is very difficult. You're constantly on the go, everything else. I do think, you know, that there are certain, I don't think women want preferential treatment. I know in America, people very much go for, you know, the positive discrimination. And I know it's a big thing in America. I know in France, it's the exact opposite, that people are saying, no, we don't have any racist problems in France, which is, of course, and there has to be a mid ground somewhere in between these two, where we see this. I do think there has to be, you know, things like flexibility. Flexibility in the workplace is probably a good idea anyway. And I think the rigidity in a workplace, the sort of 9 to 5, or, you know, you're expected to work stupid number of hours, which is generally inefficient anyway, can be a lot more off-putting for women than it is perhaps for men. Super macho environments can be, of course, off-putting for a lot of men as well, but they kind of just fit in because they're not the target, if you will, of this environment. So I think, you know, managing a culture that actually values people, that values people's opinions, that values people pushing back, that values people, you know, that it's not a case of doing what everybody, or, you know, people should feel free to give their opinion, supported as to what it is. It doesn't mean you have to do what they say, but there should be an environment there which allows for diversity of opinion and thought that makes you go, hold on, that could be a good idea. Let's explore that a little bit further, rather than hearing the same, yeah, you're right, Stephen. I mean, if I ever say something and everybody around me is saying, that's a good idea, Stephen, then clearly there's something wrong here, because the chances of everybody thinking it's a good idea, it means that some people are just not prepared to say it's not a good idea because they don't want the hassle, maybe, or they don't feel that I value their opinion. So I think creating that culture whereby people feel free and valued to actually give their opinion, give diverse viewpoint, push back on decisions that are made and push back on cultural norms, which may not seem particularly appropriate to them, I think is really, really important. We are going to see a pendulum. I mean, I think we haven't really talked about this, but, you know, behind all of this is kind of the Me Too thing and everything. And I don't think business has not really had its Me Too moment yet. We've seen it in Hollywood. We've seen it in some bits of business, but not really. But I think, you know, politics will probably have more. I think this is in the background, and we will see a swing, perhaps a very extreme turn the other way, potentially. That's okay. I mean, that's just kind of the way it kind of finds the midground as to where it needs to be. But it comes from respect. We need to have an environment that respects the individual, that respects the opinion of the individual, and values them as individuals, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely really important to, like you said, be respectful of others, be listening to others, and be keeping in mind how we can support diversity in our workplaces and in our lives, and also be on the lookout for holding organizations accountable too. So that brings us to the end of our podcast today. Thank you very much, Stephen, for a really great chat on diversity in the workplace. And let's hope that we continue to see positive change.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure for me to do this. And yes, hopefully we will see moving forward more and more diversity and the improvements that come with it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.